All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves this week in Parshas B'Shalach. I want to begin by thanking the sponsors of tonight's shir, by thanking Galia and Joe Berry for dedicating the shir in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Galia's father, Morris Coppersmith, Moshe Ben Yehuda, Zichrono Livrach. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah. We also dedicate our learning. We know that, unfortunately, there was an attack in the north of Eretz Yisrael this morning that claimed the lives of two soldiers, Captain Yochai Kalangel and Sergeant Gerard Chaim Hini. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, their neshamas will have an aliyah and their families in a chama. So what I wanted to focus on tonight is something a little bit different. You know, normally in this year, so I focus on a particular episode, a particular mitzvah, a particular idea, and then we try to analyze it through a couple of different lenses of various mefarshim. Instead, I found my attention drawn in a little bit of a different way. I'm going to take you on this journey with me. So if you've been following Chumash Shmos, which of course we all have, because that's our current events, right? The current events for the Jew, ultimately, again, is what's happening in the particular parasha. So you'll notice that there are a number of mitzvos that we've been given over the last couple of weeks. And as I was looking at those mitzvos, I began to wonder to myself, what is the connection between each of these particular ideas? So let's just do a quick run-through of the mitzvos that we have covered over the last few parashos. We begin with number one, really beginning in last week, because remember, again, for example, if you look at the Sefer Achinuch, so Sefer Achinuch is one of the Sifrei HaMitzvos, one of the codifiers of mitzvos. So if you look in the Sefer Achinuch, interestingly enough, the bulk of the Sefer Achinuch begins from Sefer Shmos and on. Because according to most of the codifiers of mitzvos, Bereshis at most has two mitzvos, and they are Piri of Arivia, according to some. Now, not everybody even agrees. Everyone agrees that the mitzvah Piri of Arivia, of procreation. Not everyone agrees that it comes from Bereshis. Others explain that it comes later on in the Chumash, perhaps in Parshas Tazria, where the Torah speaks about the concept or the lachos of childbirth. But let's assume Piri of Arivia and Gid Anosha. Bris Milah does not come from Bereshis. Bris Milah comes from Parshas Tazria. Ubayom Hashemini Yimol Besar Arloso. So at most, you have a maximum of two mitzvos, biblical mitzvos. Now, granted, as in, there are other rabbinic mitzvos that have their derivatives in Sefer Bereshis. For example, the concept of Shiva, interestingly enough, the rabbinic concept, finds its expression in Sefer Bereshis in the way in which Yaakov Avinu mourned for Yosef, and then the way Yosef and his brothers mourned for Yaakov. But biblical mitzvos, and most we have two, really the Torah as a book of law begins in Sefer Shmos. So let's take a look at all the mitzvos we had over the last weeks. Number one. So again, this is the beginning of Parashas Bo. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aaron be'eretz Yisrael 2 weeks ago. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe and Aaron, saying, HaChodesh hazeh lachem rosh chodeshim. Remember again, God gives Moshe Rabbeinu the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, the mitzvah of sanctification of the new moon, which essentially means God gives Moshe Rabbeinu the concept of the lunar calendar. Kiddush HaChodesh. Next, number two, Dabru el Kaladas Yisrael Eimor, speak to the entire assembly of Jewish people and say, Be'asra l'chodesh hazeh v'yikhu lahem ish Se leves avos se labayis. Each person will take a lamb for each home. Vimi mat habayit bayis mios misa. V'lo kachu shchina kar ve'lov. B'michsas nefashos ish lefi achlota chosu alase. Se tamim zachar ben shana yia lechem min akvasim o min ha'izim tikachu. You have to have a perfect male lamb in its first year. You may take it either from the sheep or from the goats. V'haya lechem lemishmeres. You have to guard it. Ad arba asar yom lachodesh hazeh, until the 14th of the month of Nisan, v'shachatu oso kol kehal adas Yisrael ben arba'im. And then at that point in time, midday, on the afternoon of the 14th, what we call now Erev Pesach, you will shecht this animal. This mitzvah is called Karban Pesach, Paschal Lamb. So Kiddush HaChodesh, sanctification of the new moon, Karban Pesach. Next. Now, interesting, if there's a medrash that brings down to number three, the Yikhu Lahem, and we'll loop back to this later on, Shetei Alekicha Lishma, that when you designate the animal as Karban Pesach, you have to designate it for a specific purpose. Now, as an aside, not a topic for tonight, there are a number of fundamental differences between what we call Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Doros, the first Pesach observed in Egypt, and the eternal Pesach that we observe until this day. One of the interesting distinctions they had in Pesach Mitzrayim was they had to take the lamb on the 10th. That obligation never applied again. And then remember, from Mitzrayim and on, when did you purchase your Paschal lamb? Whenever you wanted, right? Whenever you wanted, there's an obligation. You want to remember again, presumably, if you're coming from outside of Yerushalayim, right? You probably, like, if you ever take the Derech HaAvot tour, right, through the Gush, and you could literally go ahead and trace the way right up that the pilgrims went to Yerushalayim. So you can imagine, if you're traveling from outside of Yerushalayim, so Bepashtus, one would assume you probably were not taking too much livestock with you. On the other hand, if you are a resident of Yerushalayim, perhaps you brought your animal a little bit earlier on. So the point is, it doesn't matter. As long as you have an animal that is free from blemish at the time of the sacrificial time on Erev Pesach, you are good to go. So now again, we have another mitzvah, second mitzvah, Karban Pesach. Next, number four. V'chi yagur itcha ger, v'asa Pesach la'Hashem, when you will have a ger in this context means a convert. Converts will come and live with you. He'll convert, he'll join the Jewish people. Va'asa Pesach la'Hashem, he'll do a Karban Pesach. Himol lo kol zachar, v'az yakriv la'asoso. So you have to circumcise every male. Then he could come to offer up the Karban. V'hayo ke'ezrach ha'aretz v'chol orel lo yochal bo. A no uncircumcised man is permitted to partake of the Karban Pesach. Torah achos yielochem. Torah achos yelo ezrach v'lager agar besochem. V'ya'asu kol b'nei yisrael kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe v'es Aaron kein osu. So this section ends off very interestingly that the Jewish people did everything that Moshe Rabbeinu instructed. Now, the assumption is that what the Pasuk is referring to over here is the details of the Karban Pesach. But in fact, if you take a look at number 5, Vayasu kol b'nei Yisrael, shelo nimtza echad mehem orel, shene'emar kol b'nei Yisrael. So what did the Jewish people do in Mitzrayim before they offered up the Karban Pesach? Bris Milah. Now, this is interesting because the fact that the Jewish men circumcised themselves before partaking of the Paschal Lamb is not written explicitly in the text. The way that the Medrash understands it is the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu gives them the laws of Karban Pesach and tells them one of the laws of Karban Pesach is that you may not eat it if you are an Orel, if you are uncircumcised. So the Medrash understands when the Pasuk is Vayasu kol b'nei Yisrael kasher tziva shemes Moshe, the people did everything that Moshe commanded. That refers to Bismillah, which also is an interesting aside. It's clear that they did not circumcise themselves, apparently, during the 210 years in servitude, which is quite interesting. Otherwise, again, there would not have been a big deal that was made about circumcision prior to Karban Pesach. So mitzvah number 3 we have is now Bismillah. Take a look at number 6. The list goes on. Vaydabra Hashem al Moshe Leymar, Kadesh li kol bechar petal korechem bivnei Yisra ba'adam, Uba behema lihu. End of last week's parasha. The Shbrach Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, literally, sanctify to me every firstborn, everyone that opens the womb among the children of Israel, among man and among animals, it is mine. This is known as Pidyon Bechar. Pidyon Bechar, the idea that to this day, now again, obviously, it's not, Pidyon Bechar is not so common, only because there have to be a number of different criteria that are met, right? Obviously, it doesn't apply to Kohanim Levim, doesn't apply if the mother is a Bas Kohen or a Bas Levi, only applies if it's a natural birth, only applies if it's a firstborn boy. So you take all of those things into account. You don't hear about Pidyon HaBen so often. But nevertheless, this is the next mix that we have, Pidyon HaBen, redemption of the firstborn. Let's go on, number 7. Now, in number 7 is not as much a mitzvah as much as it is an event, but it's a seminal event, that's why I included it here. Az Yashir Moshe uvnei Yisrael sashira hazos la'Hashem. Remember, this is after the crossing of the Red Sea, after Kriyas Yamsuf, Jewish people escape miraculously from the Egyptians, water comes crashing down on the Egyptians. Torah tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu and Bnei Yisrael launch into spontaneous song. Vayomru, and they said, Vayomru Leymar, Ashira la Hashem ki ga'o ga'a, sus v'rachbo rama bayom. And they spoke, saying, I will sing to the Lord, for very exalted is he, a horse and its rider he cast into the sea. So again, Shira is not a mitzvah, but yet, again, it's a major event, it's a spiritual event that occurred for the Jewish people. Let's go on. One more mitzvah. Number 8. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. So this is this week's parasha. Hashem said to Moshe, Ad ana me'antem lishmar mitzvosai v'sorosai. Literally, how long will you refuse to observe my commandments and my teachings? Now, what's the context here? So the context here is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Klal Yisrael, gave the Jewish people the man. And he said to them, listen, here's the deal with the man. Everybody gets an equal amount. And just be aware, it falls 6 days, does not fall on the seventh. Sure enough, what happened the first Shabbos that we were in the desert? People went out to check for the man. But, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu gets upset. The Baruch gets upset for understandable reasons. I told, you know, here, I'm God, I'm supporting you. I'm taking care of you in a miraculous way. So I'm telling you, it's not going to fall. It's not going to fall on Shabbos. So am I not good enough for my word? Do you not trust me enough? I'm sustaining you. You can't live without my providence, without my divine sustenance. So I'm telling you, it's not going to fall on Shabbos. Why can't you just trust me? This, by the way, again, also not a topic for tonight, but it's a fundamental Achilles heel of the Jewish people, the inability to truly believe. Because understand, to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do you have to do? To believe in God? You have to trust. What else? What does that require? Person has to make themselves vulnerable. What is the one thing that we do anything, that we try to avoid at all costs? Making ourselves vulnerable. Man does not like to admit vulnerability, because vulnerability represents a lack of self-autonomy. Self-autonomy represents a lack of almost ability to self-sustain. And man never wants to yield the reins of control. Some of us do this consciously, some of us do it subconsciously, and that's why you always see this tension between HaKadosh Baruch and Klal Yisrael, not really between God and us, more between us and God, because we're simply unwilling to fully commit, because we're unwilling to make ourselves fully vulnerable to HaKadosh Baruch. In any event, God gets upset on the first Shabbos, when Jewish people come out to collect them on. So what happens? Ru'u ki Hashem nasan lachem haShabbos. See that God has given you Shabbos. Al kein, hu nosim lachem bayom haShishi lechem yomayim. Therefore, God gives you a double portion of man on Friday. And therefore, shavu ish tachtov. Let each man remain in this place. Al yetze ish mimkomo biyom haShvi. Let no man leave his place on the seventh day. Now, this is a very strange passage. What does this mean? What does this mean? Let them. Meaning, I understand if you tell me you don't want me to carry, that's a malacha. Or I don't tell me that this is restricted, I can't prepare the money. What does it mean that no man could leave his place? So if you look at number 9, the Sefer Achinuch writes, V'ahi b'shach yishba mitzvahs lo sase achas v'hi, shenimnu shelo laleches b'shabis, chutz ligvulim yiduim. So according to the Sefer Achinuch, what this mitzvah is conveying to us is the concept of Tchum Shabbos. That on Shabbos there is a boundary in which, see, we don't really, for us, we don't come in contact with this halacha all that much, because technically speaking, Tchum is 2,000 amos. You have, you could do the math, an amos is about a foot and a half. But that Tchum only really begins from the edge of habitation. So like it would be like in the times of the Gemara, so you had cities, and you didn't have one city on top of the other, you had city, and then you had open space, so the 2,000 Amma boundary would begin at the edge of the city. Today, our lines between cities, our lines between towns are very blurred. So as such, one could really walk an incredible distance over the course of Shabbos, while technically speaking, still remaining in the Tchum. So we're not going to get into the details of the halacha, but suffice it to say, here HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving the Jewish people the mitzvah of Tchum Shabbos. There's a boundary. You can't go wherever you want. You can't travel wherever you want. This is independent of carrying something or not carrying something. I have nothing on my person, nothing in my pockets. There is still a limitation as to how far I can travel on Shabbos. So it's striking, you know, when you think about this. So look at all the mitzvahs we have. We began with Kiddush HaChodesh, sanctification of the new moon, number 1. Number 2, Karban Pesach. Number three, Bris Mila. Number four, Pidyon Bechor, redemption of the firstborn. Number five, not really a mitzvah, but more like a spiritual event of Shira, Az Yashir, song. And number six, Tchum Shabbos, Shabbos boundaries. And this is all contained pretty much within two parshios. And the question we have to try to understand, or try to really explore a little bit, is what is the connection between these mitzvahs? Obviously, nothing the Ribono Shel Olam does is random. Nothing is ever random. But certainly, again, if you could imagine, if he's giving these mitzvahs to the fledgling Jewish nation, these mitzvahs are here to create the spiritual foundation. So what is the connection, or is there a connection, between all of these mitzvahs? So I want to take an approach that actually takes us to a Mishnah in Perkei Avos. Now, again, we're going to go on a little bit of a tangent, but you're going to see we're going to loop back. Take a look at number 10. It says an amazing Mishnah in Perkei Avos. The Mishnah writes, Rabbi Elozer Hamodi'i Omer. Rabbi Elozer Hamodi'i says, Hamechalo asa kodshim, so one who literally profanes. Kodshim are what? Karbano, sacrificial items. So one who goes ahead and profanes sacrificial items, which again, would just seem to mean a person does not treat karbanos, person does not treat sacrificial animals as proper, as a sanctified item, but treats them just simply as a mundane item. Someone who is mevazeh. Mevazeh means what? To disparage or to degrade, or make, literally disparage or degrade the yamim tovim, the moados. Or Malbin, which again, CC doesn't take the Yamim Tovim seriously. Malbin Pnei Chaver Barabim, that's an easy one. Right? This literally embarrasses someone publicly. Vahamefer Briso Shel Avram Avinu, or someone Mefer Briso Shel Avram Avinu, how would you translate that? Reverses or negates the Bris, literally Bris Mila, the covenant of Avram Avinu. Alav Shalom. Vahamegale Ponim Batorah Shaloka Alacha. Now this is interesting. What does that mean? Hamegale panim b'Torah shelo ba'alacha. How would you translate that? Megale panim literally means what? To reveal a face, b'Torah, in Torah, shelo ka'alacha. It means that somebody gives inappropriate interpretations of Torah. Someone goes out and says, this is what I think. So, very nice, that's what you think. Who says that it's true? Where do you see that it's true? What proof text do you have? So, Megala Panavit Torah means someone who advances inappropriate understandings of Torah. In all of these cases, so again, remember, we've got Mechalo Kodshim, someone is disparaging or degrading towards sacrifices. Someone is disparaging or degrading towards the Amim Tovim. Embarrasses his friend in public. Somehow negates or reverses the Bris of Avram Avinu, Bris Mila. Someone who interprets Torah inappropriately, even though such a person may have learned a lot of Torah, and such a person may have done many wonderful mitzvos, such a person has no portion in the world to come. So this Mishnah is intriguing on a number of levels. First of all, it's intriguing because this doesn't appear to really belong in Pirkei Avos. Right? Pirkei Avos is a book, is a sefer of proper moral ethical conduct. The whole idea of sefer of Pirkei Avos is how to refine the individual and to grow. Pirkei Avos is not really about punishments. Pirkei Avos is not really about what not to do. It's much more about what to do. So that's interesting by itself that this is here. But let's just get a little bit of context. Who was Rabbi Elazar Hamodi'i? When did he? Now this is going to be very important. Look at the Medrash. So there's an amazing Medrash in Eicha Rabba, and the Medrash gives us the history of Rabbi Elazar Hamodi, which is amazing. He says, first of all, Rabbi Elazar Hamodi, we know, lived during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Specifically, he occupied a leadership position during the time of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Remember, Bar Kokhba rebellion occurs when? Approximately 60 years after the destruction of the Second Temple. This was very important. Bar Kokhba was very important because remember, the Bar Kokhba rebellion was an attempt to reestablish, and for a little while he did, reestablish Jewish autonomy. There was actually a thought, remember Rabbi Akiva, of course, thought that Bar Kokhba was the Mashiach, there was a real threat that Bar Kokhba was going to lead us in a successful campaign to overthrow Roman occupation. Look what the Medrash says. Shalosh shanim umechza, hekif Adrianus Kesar lebetar. V'haya sham ralaz ha-modi, asuk pesako bataniso, u'b'cho yom mispalo v'omer ribon shalom al teishev bedin hayom, u'lebasof notan daita lachzar. Listen to this. The Medrash writes, Sa Adrianus Kesar, the emperor known as Hadrian, right? This is Hadrian. Now, this is very important because, remember, we know, interest just as an aside, when the Romans destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, when they conquered Yerushalayim, there was no religious persecution. There was subjugation. Judea became a vassal state, but there was no religious persecution. Religious persecution, or as it's known as Hadrianic persecution, only begins after the Bar Kokhba rebellion. After the Romans crush Bar Kokhba, then there's an understanding that the Jews will not become a vassal state unless you subjugate them spiritually. That's when you have Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs. That's when you have all the craziness, all under the Emperor Hadrian. So Hadrian was laying siege to Beitar for 3.5 years. Can you imagine this? Rome, just so you understand, was the mightiest empire on the face of the earth. And they can't get through Beitar. You know, we're a tough people. It's an amazing, amazing thing that when we put our minds to something, there is nothing, virtually nothing, that could break Jewish resolve. So the Emperor Hadrian is with his entire army around Beitar for 3.5 years. Now, it's interesting. The Medrash writes, why couldn't they get through Beitar? So the walls. So the Medrash attributes the strength of Beitar to Rabbi Elazar HaModi. Rabbi Elazar HaModi was sitting there davening, fasting in his sackcloth, and every single day he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please do not go ahead and hand us over to the Romans. Okay, so listen to this. Hadrian, the Medrash writes, has had enough. He's ready to go back to Rome. Okay, forget about this Beitar, forget about these Jews, he's ready to go home. Second line, end of the second line, number 11. Asa chad kusai, umatzo v'amrlo adoni, kol yomin dahada tarnagoltam misgagea bikitma, les at kavishla. So this is amazing. This Kusai. Now remember, the Kusim are an interesting group of people. They converted. They converted because there was an outbreak of lions in the north of Eretz Yisrael. They were settled. But again, their conversion was incredibly suspect. When the Romans came in, the Kusim pretty much aligned themselves with the Romans against the Jews. So there is this Kusi, this individual, says to Hadrian, listen, don't back up so quickly. The reason you can't get through the walls of Beitar is because of this rabbi. He called him literally a crowing rooster. Just like if the rooster keeps crowing, you can't fall asleep. So as long as this rabbi keeps davening, you're not going to get through Beitar. But give me an opportunity. Let me see what I can do. Okay. Miad olil bey bebuve b'dimedinasa v'ashkei cheder b'lazer. So what happened? So this Kusi makes his way, sneaks his way into the city, and he finds Rabbi Elazar. Dava kaimu matzli, he was davening. Avar garme lachish bunei Rabbi Elazar hamodi azlun va'amel bar koziva chavivach Rabbi Elazar boi leishama medinasim Adrianus. So what happens? This Kusi comes in, he finds Rabbi Elazar hamodi, and he whispers something in Rabbi Elazar's ear. The soldiers see this guy who's not from the city whispering in Rabbi Elazar's ear. They come to Bar Kokhba, they say, Bar Kokhba, listen. Now remember again, Bar Kokhba and Rabbi Elazar hamodi are very close. So he says, Bar Kokhba, listen, something strange is happening because it looks like there's a guy who's a spy who is just whispering in the ear of Rabbi Elazar HaModi. And is it possible that Rabbi Elazar HaModi is now aligned with the Emperor Hadrian? Again, remember, difficult times make people exceptionally paranoid. So they're nervous. Spy is talking to Rabbi, whispering in Rabbi Elazar HaModi's ear, what's going on? Shalach va'asi lahu kusai. So what happened? So Bar Kokhba captures this Kusi. Amrle my amritle, amrle in ana amrlecha malka katile lahu gavra vein lis ana amrlecha at katile lahu gavra ava mutav liktle lahu gavra lagarme velo tisparsin mister in demachusa. So the man. So what does the Kusi do? This was a setup. The Kusi says to Bar Kokhba, I can't tell you because if I tell you what I said to Rabbi Elazar HaModi, then what's going to happen? The king is going to kill me. So what has he essentially just said to Bar Kokhba? What has he essentially just said? That Elazar HaModi is in cahoots, has churned. aren't bar kochva on the Jews, and is aligning himself with Hadrian, which of course is an explicit lie. So ben koziva savar bedate de baila shal medinasa. Kevan de chasal, Rabbi Lazar Tzaluse, shalach va'aisi. So what happens? Bar Kokhva can't believe this. He can't believe that Rabbi Lazar Hamodi'i has actually turned on him and potentially aligned himself with Hadrian. So wait, so Rabbi Lazar Hamodi'i finishes davening, and he sends for Rabbi Lazar Hamodi'i to be brought before him. Amrlei, ma amar lecha hadin kosai. Bar Kokhva asks Rabbi Lazar Hamodi'i, tell me, what did that kusi say to you? Amar le yet less ana yada malachish li budnai velo shamas le klum da ana bitsaluse kaamina veles ana yada mahava amar. Rosamundi says, I have no idea. I was davening. He came over. He whispered something in my ear. To be honest, I didn't pay any attention. I have no idea what he said. Nismale rugze leben koziva. This is an incredibly tragic turn of events. Bar Kokhva gets angry. He feels Elazar Hamodi'i is not being truthful. Yohiv lechad bi'ata beraglei v'katlei. Bar Kokhva kicked Rabbi Elazar Hamodi'i and he killed him. He killed him. So the tragic end of this story is Rabbi Elazar Hamodi'i, the man who was responsible for the spiritual safety and security of Beitar, is suspected by Bar Kokhva of being a spy just because of what this kusi said, and Bar Kokhva, in a fit of rage, kills Elazar Hamodi. Yatzis Abaskol V'Amra. At this point, Abaskol, a heavenly voice came out and said, "Hoy roi ha'alil ozveatzon cherev al zero va'al ayin mina." Because the pasuk from Zechariah, essentially, the Abaskol says, "This is the end. Now Beitar is going to fall." So this is Elazar Hamodi. So this is important. First of all, Elazar Hamodi obviously means to the very tragic end, totally unnecessarily. But what's also interesting is now we're also told about when it is that he's living. Now that we're told about when he's living, his statement takes on a new meaning as well. If you take a look at number 12, Sir Rav Yisrael Meir Lau, former chief rabbi of Israel, present chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, so he writes in his Perush on Pirkei Avos, I'm not going to do this whole thing. I put it all on the sheet because you can look at it on your own. But I just want to show you some of it. He says, "B'divrei HaMishnah nitan lishmoa es hadeat kufa bahinamra." So interestingly enough, he says, now, this is in general, especially in Pirkei Avos, it's very important to always understand the historical context of the author of the particular Mishnah, because often, remember, Pirkei Avos, especially Pirkei Avos, as if you could imagine, if they're writing Pirkei Avos today, so you'd send out a mass email to, you know, the 100 greatest rabbis of the generation, asking them to please submit their most important ideas. What do you think are the most important ideas by which will serve as the guiding light for the Jewish people? So in order to understand what's important to someone, it's also important to understand when they're living and what's happening around life. So Rabbi Lau suggests, now that we saw this Medrash Necha, and we understand the circumstances in which Rabbi Elazar Hamodi'i lives, we can begin to appreciate why he says what he says. Look what he writes. Ba'am Yisrael, satsu kitos shonos umshunos, shepirshu es ha-Torah ba'ofen hanira lahem, kitos acheros kafru b'samchusa shalalacha, kifi shuvim midra ador. There are many different sects that are popping up during the time of Rabbi Elazar Hamodi'i. Interestingly enough, if you look at paragraph Beis, b'tkufas Rabbi Elazar Hamodi'i, there is a new sect that actually comes to formation in the lifetime of Rabbi Elazar Hamodi'i, and that is Kat Hanotzrim. What was that? What was that? Christianity. So Christianity, remember, there's an incredible amount of dispute exactly when Jesus was born. But there's no question, it's certainly somewhere around times of the second Beis HaMikdash, right? Either right before or right after, meaning right before destruction, right after destruction. And Rabbi Lau suggests that Christianity is coming onto its own now at the time Rabbi Elazar Hamodi'i is living. Asher kafra ban hagas habari kafi sheyadus makira, which introduced an entirely new idea of theology, the Trinity. Heim shinu aves mo'ade Yisrael, they changed the holidays. Kafru b'yichidiyuso shel am Yisrael. They discounted the singular importance and the singular holiness of the Jewish people. And what happened? And they've gone ahead and they gave different interpretations to the Torah. So Rabbi Lau suggests something very interesting. Rabbi Lau suggests that what Rabbi Elazar HaModi'i says in this Mishnah is a response to what? The various sects that were popping up all around. So look what he writes. He says, look at paragraph Dalet. Paragraph Dalet. Kach l'mashal, lo nechtam gizar dinam shal anshi Yushalayim, Omer HaMedrash, ela al shenagu bizayon kachim. For example, the Medrash writes that one of the reasons that the fate of the Jewish people were sealed for the destruction of the temple was because we no longer approached sacrificial service with sanctity. What's the first thing Rabbi Elazar HaModi'i said? That someone who is, what was the Lashon Mevazer? Someone who is Mechalal, thank you, Mechalal Es HaKodshim, ultimately again, Eino Chilek L'Olam Haba. Next, paragraph Vav, Bedor HaChurban, He'ozu HaTzedukim VaBaitusim, La'arer Amo'adei Yisrael. Remember, Tzedukim VaBaitusim were two sects that believe in the written law, Torah Shevichsav, but did not believe in the oral law, the oral tradition. Now, one of the ways in which this non-compliance with Torah Shabbat Peh came up was how? Was in the structure of the Yamim Tovim. For example, the Torah, when it refers to Pesach, or actually when it refers to the Omer, says, Umimacharas HaShabbos Tisperu Chamishim Yom. From the day after Shabbos, you shall begin to count 50 days. Reference to the Omer. Now, we know, because Torah Shabbat Peh tells us, that Shabbos in that pasuk refers to what? Pesach. The Tzedukim and the Matusim, who did not believe in the oral tradition, only the written law, understood that Shabbos meant what? Shabbos always meant Shabbos. In which case, they always began the counting of the Omer from a Sunday, which of course messes up what? Which of course messes up Shavuos, right? And of course, if you mess up Shavuos, you end up messing up a good part of the rest of the calendar as well. So that's Rabbi Elazar HaModi'i says what? So first of all, he addresses those who take their karbanos too lightly. Next, he says Mavaza Samoados. He speaks to those who disparage the Yomim Tovim. Next, he says paragraph Zayin Hamal ben Pnei Chaver Berabim. So next was embarrassing someone else. Tevu Techunazu. Remember again, the Gemara says explicitly that the reason that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was why? Because of Sinas Chinam. So Rabbi Lau posits that when Rabbi Elazar HaModi'i says, Mal ben es penech basu, Mal ben es penech aver barabim, what he's referring to is mistreating another. Next, paragraph Ches, Bein Gezeres HaRamam Haisa, one of the edicts that the Romans leveled upon us, Kiyadua, Gam ha'gzera al hamila va'achin hayu Yehudim shenimnu mila mal spneihem ve'af nusil lechasos es yadusam kilu lo nimolu. So there are many Jews who were too afraid to circumcise their children, and others who were circumcised but tried to make themselves look uncircumcised. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar HaModi'i had to say in response to this that you cannot disparage, you cannot reverse the bris of Avram Avinu. And lastly, paragraph Tes ukimuvan. And of course, this idea of expressing inappropriate explanations or understandings or interpretations of Torah was a reference to all of these other movements. So on the most basic level, now that we understand where Rabbi Elazar HaModi'i lived, so Rabbi Lau suggests this Mishnah is a response to the emergence of these breakaway sects within Judaism. And Rabbi Elazar HaModi'i is trying to steady the ship. He's trying to say, yes, we're living in turbulent times, but we have to solidify our core. We have to solidify our foundation. There are certain things that we could give in on. There are certain things we could yield on, but there are certain things for which we must hold the line, because if we don't, we face an existential threat to our people. Okay, that's the first interpretation of the Mishnah. But look at number 13. Rabbi Lau here quotes, and this is actually, this is a really magnificent piece. Rabbi Lau here quotes from the Chassid Yavetz. Now, the Chassid Yavetz was Rav Yosef Yavetz. Now, we don't know so much about Rav Yosef Yavetz. Here's what we do know. He was a Spanish Jew that left in 1492 with the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. So that we know. Again, how old he was already a recognized Torah scholar at that time. When exactly he was born, where exactly in Spain he was born is not immediately clear, but we know for sure that he was one of the prominent rabbanim who left Spain during the expulsion, and he settles in Mantua, Italy. And in Mantua, Italy, he becomes one of the prominent rabbanim of the Italian Jewish community. So the Chassid Yavetz wrote a perush on Pirkei Avos. So the truth is, I was actually going to Xerox it for you, but the version I have actually has very bad print. Rabbi Lau quotes him. Rabbi Lau doesn't quote him in totality. He only quotes him kind of like pieces. So we'll have to expound a little bit on it, but this is much clearer print. So Rabbi Lau writes, he says, HaChassid Yavetz, Misyaches Leze Umazvir, Ki Bechol Chameshes HaMekarim Medubar Ba'adam HaMezalzel B'Kedusha Kol Shein. So listen to this. Rabbi Lau, the Chassid Yavetz, excuse me, goes through each of these categories one by one. Let's analyze this. He says, what does it mean that someone disparages? Or no, disparages the wrong way. Mechala really means what? Profane. Profane, right? Chol. He takes away, he says that there's no kedusha by karbanos. It's not kedusha. Animal can't become kadosh, it's profane. What does that mean? Who mistaken kachi Hashem in basar karbanos, kilim chulin. He treats the sacrificial animals, the sacrificial meat, like it's profane, like it's mundane. His nagus zu, nova'as mechoser yicholoso, lahavchin ma nishtane bebasar zeh. So why does a person profane sacrificial meat? Because he says, I don't understand. What do you mean this is holy? Right? What does he do? He goes over to his freezer. And what is he seeing? What's in his freezer? Right? I've got a steak. I've got this. I've got that. So this meat's holy and that meat's not holy? I don't understand. If this one's holy, then that one should be holy. And if that one's not holy, then this one shouldn't be holy. What are you talking about? That some meat is holy, some meat is not holy. Right? 5 minutes ago, this sheep was running around in my backyard. And now, right? The lamb was running around. Now it's lamb chops. So when it was running around in my backyard, it was just a regular sheep. No, and now suddenly again it has kiddush. What are you talking about? Look what he writes. Ha'im Dibor shall Adam yakal lahafoch osa lemashu acher. Madua alai lihizark bibifsara yosir mibsar shar behemos. This is very interesting. How does an animal become a carbon? How does an animal become a carbon? A verbal designation. A person, I take a sheep and I say, Hare zu liola. Hare zu chatos. Hare zu neder. All I've done is I've changed the status of the animal with my verbal designation. Do you know that the entire take-home message of karbanos, there's a whole dispute as to whether or not there's going to be karbanos in the third Beis HaMikdash or not. So it sounds strange for us to pine for animal sacrifice. It sounds so alien to us. But there's a very important lesson that's learned with karbanos. What's the important lesson? It's the power of speech. That with one word, or with one phrase, Harezu Ola, I take an animal that is mundane, that is regular, that is base, and I transform it into a Chafza Shel Kedusha. I transform it into an object of holiness. I take something that is my property, and I transform it into a Kedush Baruch Hu's property, literally with one word. Literally with one word. So says the Chassid Yavetz something amazing. A person who is mechalel as hakadshim says problem is his lack of understanding. Is it with karbanos? What? Where does his lack of understanding lie? With the power and sanctity of speech. He doesn't understand how words are so powerful that they can create realities. That words can affect change. That words at the end of the day have the ability to take something mundane and to literally transform it into the holiest of holy. So mavaza esakotshim means, it's not that he's just simply profaning karbanos, is he is profaning the power of speech. He doesn't believe that the spoken word has sanctity. He doesn't believe that the spoken word has power. He doesn't believe that the spoken word could actually affect change. Next, paragraph Gimel. Gam kach gam hamevaze es hamoados. So what does it mean ultimately again? Someone who disparages the Yamim Tovim. Asher kivnu mikroi kodesh. Zmanim hamefuroshim mishaymos hashanam. So remember, there are times of the calendar that are separate and distinct and set aside from the rest of the year. Bizui, so if a person degrades or disparages them in Tovim, so Bizuyav Novea Michoser Yecholoso Lahachil Es HaUvda Shekviyas HaChodesh Api Bezdin Nosenes Kiddusha Lemoadim. You know what this guy's problem is? His problem isn't with the Yamim Tovim. His problem is the ability to accept the idea that there's a concept of sacred time. That there's a concept that there are periods that are more holy than others. Ma yom yomayim, why is today different than any other day? Ha'im diburam shel chachamim mikve eze yom kadosh ve'eza einochein. So again, obviously this overlaps a little bit on the dibur also, but here says the chasigaves, mevazas hamoados means that a person doesn't understand that you can be mekadesh hazman. You know, there are two ways you could approach time. You could be a victim to time, or you could own time. You could say, look, I'm a victim. At the end of the day, I can't control. I'd love to make this hour, stretch it into two, right? I'm sure you have nothing better to do, right? So I'd love to take the hour. I'd love to freeze time and maximize. But what could I do? I'm a victim of the reality of time. That's one way you could look at it. And that's an easy way to avoid all responsibility for how you use your time. Or you could realize that although you can't control the passage of time, I absolutely have the ability to control the sanctity of time. I can't control the passage of Zman, but I can be Mekadesh HaZman. I can make my time holy. I can make days holy, I can make weeks holy, I can make a year holy, I can make moments holy. That is the concept of Kiddush HaZman. So someone who is Mevaze Es Samoados, what is he saying? There's no such thing as sanctified time. Time is time is time, and the psychology of that is, I don't want to accept the fact that there's a concept of sanctity of time, because if I accept that concept, then what? Then that becomes responsibility to Mekadesh, that's mine. Yes? Correct. That is correct. Correct. It is also disrespect for authority, although we're going to get that disrespect to authority is going to occupy its own place, but you are correct. So, okay, so far again, and this is, you see how this is amazing? So this individual, it's not just about Yontif. Who doesn't like Yontif, really? I mean, in reality, who in their right mind doesn't want the Yontif? No matter how you observe it, everybody wants the Yontif, but the idea over here is Mevaze HaMoados means he doesn't believe in the concept of Kiddush HaZman. You can't sanctify time. Next, Dalit Hamefer Asabris, one who literally, so Mefer Asabris literally means annuls or reverses the brismila. So remember, so this is actual brismila. Os bris kodesh, kashera adam moshech or loso. When literally, so remember, we saw in the Medrash that, or we actually saw in Rabbi Lau what he quoted earlier as well, that there were those, especially those during times of persecution, that would try to make themselves look uncircumcised. So if a person tries to change their physical appearance, to make themselves look like an Arel, to make themselves look uncircumcised, who eino masiges ha'uvda, shechilo kedusha shenitva bivsaro binikuso. If someone tries to go ahead and somehow annul or reverse the bris of Avraham Avinu, what are they denying? Bris represents the innate kedusha of man. Bris represents the idea, you know, it's a very important idea in Judaism. You know, in Judaism, you don't have to become holy. What do you have to do? You just have to preserve and nurture the holiness you already have. It's very different because, for example, in Christian thought, and that's not like a comparative religion thing, but just an interesting comparison, right? In Christian thought, man is bad. Man is bad. Man at his core is bad. He's bad. Right? And by the way, this all comes down to how you understand the pasuk of Ki Yetzer Lev HaAdam Ra Minu Arav, that God says in Bereishis. So many religions understand it means man in his core is bad, and man has to spend his life trying to become good. We don't believe that. We believe man is good. Man has a proclivity, or perhaps again a little bit of a Yetzer Hara, right? A predisposition to engage in negative behavior, but man at his core is good. What do you have to do sometimes? Sometimes you just have to remove some of the layers, right? In Hasidus, we call this klipos. You have to remove some of the shells, and the good, the kedusha, the light is all there. That's what bris milah is. Bris milah, quite literally, is the removal of a layer of skin to expose bris, to expose holiness. So bris milah represents the idea that mankind, it's not just Jews, mankind, but specifically Am Yisrael, are innately holy. If one tries to either deny the sanctity of bris or to physically reverse the bris, they are denying the inherent and innate sanctity of the Jew. Next, paragraph Hey. Af hamal bin pnei chavera. What does this mean? Ha'asri b'tzelem elokim b'dimus kadsho. Ein amoda l'chumras ma'asav l'kach shebehevel pe'achilo d'mus tikinu shalom elok. What happens if you embarrass another? So if denying bris milah is a negation of innate sanctity, so embarrassing another is what? Is a denial of the sanctity of the other. If I embarrass you in public, what I'm saying is you're not important. Your feelings aren't important. You're not important, which is another way of saying, I don't believe that you're a tzelem Elokim. If you embarrass, if you hurt, if you disparage, if you damage another, you deny the inherent sanctity that the other possesses. And finally, paragraph Vav, Ulebasof Hamegale Panim BaTorah. What does this mean? Choshev, Kilo Pa'amuma, V'lo Chidos Kedushas Torah, V'chin Agati Ba, O Shanisi Es HaKasuv Ba, Pesach HaKol Amarti O Kasafti Es HaOla Al Dati, Ma'ra B'kach. So remember, Hamegale Panim BaTorah is someone who advances inappropriate insights or inappropriate ideas to explain Torah. So a person says, well, what did I do wrong? You know what? I'm not going to change Torah. I'm one guy. I'm just giving my opinion. You don't like my opinion. That's okay. So again, so what is a person like? A person who does that denies the sanctity of Torah. Because if you believe that Torah is Kadosh, if you believe that Torah is holy, if you believe that the Medrash is the very daughter of the Ribono Shel Olam, then you are going to be careful, and you are going to be vigilant, and you are going to be very exacting about what you say, how you say it, and how you interpret it. So look what the Chassid Yavid does for us. And this is what I mean. So suddenly again, Rabbi Lazar Hamodi is saying, what he's trying to do, and by the way, this fits in with what we said before also. Rabbi Lazar Hamodi is living in a very dangerous time, a very tumultuous time. And it is his job as a Jewish leader to try to anchor the Jewish people, to try to solidify the foundation. He says, here are the problems that we're facing. Number one, people are mechalel hakodshim. People have forgotten about the sanctity of the spoken word. It is so important to realize that you could change worlds with your words. You could affect realities with your words. The spoken word has an incredible koach. Next, people have forgotten mevazas amados. You could be mekadesh zman. You could sanctify your time. You're right. You can't slow down the passage of time, but you could absolutely choose to sanctify the time that you have. Shmefer es habris, if you try to reverse or to negate or to annul bris milah, you are negating or ignoring the inner sanctity that we each possess. You embarrass your friend in public, you are negating or ignoring his or her inherent sanctity. Megale panim b'torah, if you advance ideas or insights or ideologies that are foreign, are alien, are not appropriate within Torah, understand that you are undermining, chipping away, and eroding the sanctity of Torah. Now, why is this important? Because perhaps, we could line up all of the mitzvos that we learned about in the last, remember we spoke about 40 minutes ago? So we had six different mitzvos, or I should say really five different mitzvos, plus Shira, that we had in the course of the last two parashas. So we tried to understand, why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us these mitzvos? Right? Why these? So now we're going to begin to understand, you know why these? Because each of these mitzvos expresses an important religious hashkafa, an important religious ideal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to emotionally and spiritually ingest. Remember again, what was one of the, not necessarily going in order of the, we'll go in order of the mitzvos. The first mitzvah that we had was Kiddush HaChodesh. So what does Kiddush HaChodesh correspond to? Kiddush HaChodesh corresponds to the Mishnah of Mevazeh HaMoados. What was God trying to teach us by Kiddush HaChodesh? And this is so important. Kiddush HaChodesh, remember, if there's one thing the slave doesn't have control over, it's what? It's time. Now the truth is, you could make the same argument. Does the free man have control over time? Not really, because the truth is, the same 60-minute hour that the slave has is the same. It's not like when you become free, you suddenly get like a bonus 20 minutes in the hour, right? The slave's got 60, I've got 80, this is incredible. It's not the way it happens. We're all confined by the same framework of time. What does the Kaddish Baruch Hu tell us? HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim, as a free person, you know what you have the ability to do? You could be Mekadesh Hazman. The first lesson God teaches the fledgling Jewish people is you can't control the passage of time, but you absolutely can control the nature of your time. You could be Mekadesh Hazman. You could infuse your moments, you could infuse your hours, you can infuse your weeks, your months, and your years. Next, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us? Second mitzvah was Korban Pesach. What does Korban Pesach teach us? Remember now, go back for just a moment. Now you'll understand in number three, why I quoted this Medrash here. The Pasuk said, Vayikhu lahem, what did the Medrash say? Shetehei lekicha lishma. When you took the Korban Pesach on the 10th, what did every single person, says the Medrash, have to do? What did they have to do? Hare zo Pesach. Now can you imagine, you're on your way to emancipation, and suddenly you find yourself talking to a sheep. Right? Harezo Shepsula, right? Harezo Pe. It's a little bit strange. What is Kadosh Baruch Hu teaching the fledging Jewish people? The power of the spoken word. It was a sheep. It was a sheep 2 seconds ago. Now, once you said Harezo Pesach, you know what it is? You know what it is suddenly? It's a carbon. I was there as a teen, a sheep and a carbon. There's a universe of difference. A sheep is a mundane four-legged creature. A carbon is the walking, braying, neighing property of the Ribono Shel Olam. It's Kula Kadosh. How did that transition from four-legged mundane animal to sanctified property of God occur? Kiddushas Hadibur. Through the sanctification of words. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching the fledgling Jewish nation that you have the ability to affect change with your words. Never underestimate the power of your speech. What was the next mitzvah? Bris Milah. So what is Bris Milah? So again, remember, Bris Milah and Pidyon actually go together. There are two mitzvahs. Bris Milah, circumcision, and also Pidyon Bechor, redemption of the firstborn. Both of those represent the same idea, which is what? Which is what? Innate sanctity. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells the fledgling Jewish people, we're trying to rehabilitate you for being a slave. So you know what the greatest problem? You know what the greatest problem of ex-slaves as the greatest problem? Right? You should know, by the way, just as an aside, it's actually very interesting. In the African-American community, this is one of the greatest challenges that they face, which is that in many respects, culturally, they did not leave slavery. Even though slavery has been over for a long time, culturally, in many respects, they're still embedded in a culture of victimization and slavery. It's a difficult thing because when you are a slave, and again, you know, we're 3,000 years out of slavery. We're a little bit further out, but it took us a long time to leave the emotional part of slavery as well. So what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu say? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, again, Bris Milah, and gives us Pidyon Bechor to teach us what? Yes, you were slaves. But don't think that because you were slaves, you're not holy. Bris Milah tells you, you have innate holiness. Pidyon Bechor, the firstborn, tells you, you have innate holiness. You don't have to become holy. You just have to uncover your already existing innate holiness. And lastly, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell? Well, not lastly. Next, what was the next mitzvah? Tchum. So Tchum, remember Shabbos boundary. So what is Shabbos boundary? What does that correspond to? So perhaps that corresponds in the Mishnah to Megala Panim B'Torah. What does Tchum say? Tchum says there are boundaries. There are boundaries in Judaism. Yes, Judaism absolutely gives, really you'd be surprised how much room there is for self-expression, for self-actualization. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be individuals. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want us to be carbon copies of the other. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to each actualize our individual kohos, abilities, and talents. But there's a misgeret. There is a framework. There is a... I don't want to call it a box, but there is a box. It's a very, very large box in which, again, we must find our place. So what does the Kaddish Baruch Hu say? After all of this, yes, you have the ability to go ahead and change worlds with your word. You have the ability, Mekadesh Hazman. You possess inner sanctity. But yet, what? Understand, everything you do must occur within a tchum. It has to occur within a boundary. Now, interestingly enough, there's one still that's missing, and that is, Malbin Pnei Chavero. So Malbin Pnei Chavero, we know, it corresponds to this idea of recognizing the sanctity of the other. Where did HaKadosh Baruch Hu express to us this idea of recognizing the sanctity of the other? So look at number 14. Look what the Medrash writes here. Such a beautiful Medrash. Az Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael. Remember by the Shira. This is why I brought in the Shira. Moshe Uvnei Yisrael sang, Magid HaKosuv Shehaya Moshe Shakul Kineged Yisrael V'Yisrael Shkulin Kineged Moshe B'Shah Sh'amru Es HaShira. So this is what the Medrash says. Az Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael. So the Medrash understands the Pasuk is creating an equality. Moshe is as great as the entirety of Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael together are as great as Moshe. In other words, what is the Medrash saying? That Klal Yisrael realized something by the Yam Suf that they never realized before, which was that in order to be Keneged Moshe, in order to actualize their personal greatness, they had to learn the art of Achdus. Only when we are together, only when we are biyachad, only when we respect one another, only when we collaborate with one another, only when we learn to sing with one another, even if what? Even though some of us may sing at different pitches, right? And some of us may be on key, some of us may be off key, some of us know the words, some of us don't know the words, but despite this incredible national cacophony of sound, we still find a way to sing together. That is when we are at our strongest. So interestingly enough, this idea of recognizing the sanctity of others is not something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu conveyed to us, but rather what? Something that we discovered on our own. When we saw the waves come crashing down on the Egyptians, and we saw that servitude was really over, and we looked to our left, we looked to our right, and we saw everyone around us, we realized, my gosh, we could only do this if we do it together. We can only be successful if we do it together. I can only be me, and you can only be you if we link arms and we go through this journey of life, this national journey of life together. By ourselves, we will never fully self-actualize. But if we respect the beauty and the holiness of the other, then not only do I build you up, but in doing so, I build myself up as well. Now suddenly we realize that what began as a whole chalent of mitzvos now is exceptionally methodical, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu lays the groundwork again for our national development. Again, so to bring this all together, HaKadosh Baruch Hu begins by giving us Kiddush HaChodesh, because it's through Kiddush HaChodesh that He teaches us the ability of Kiddushas HaZman. As free people, we can't control the passage of time, but we can absolutely control the quality of how we use our times. He then went on to teach us our Karban Pesach. Our words are appropriate. Our words, our speech is meaningful. You know, if there's one thing a slave doesn't have, it's what? It's what? What doesn't the slave have? A slave doesn't have a voice, right? What the slave says is irrelevant. The words of the slave fall on deaf ears. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching us to Karban Pesach, you have a voice. You have words, and your words are so powerful. Your words are so meaningful. Your words create realities. Your words change realities. Bris Mila, HaKadosh Baruch Hu then gave us. Understand, we each possess inherent sanctity. I don't have to become holy. I just have to uncover my holiness. Pidyon Bechor, same idea, redemption of the firstborn. The holiness is within. I just have to uncover it. Tchum Shabbos, everything must exist within a framework. That's all what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. And what did we discover on our own? Az Yashir Moshe B'nei Yisrael. We understood that if we're Malbim P'nei Chaveiro B'Rabim, if we fail to see the Kedusha in the other, not only do we harm the other, but we harm ourselves in the process. Az Yashir Moshe B'nei Yisrael is when, after getting all the lessons from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we realize an incredibly important lesson on our own as well. That it's only if we recognize, appreciate, and nurture the holiness of the other that we could fully actualize the holiness within as well. And so we see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like a loving father, every single parent, wants to do one thing for their child, and that is, I mean, we do many things for our children, but the most important thing we want to do for our children is we want to make sure that when they leave our home, they are fully armed with the necessary lessons, ideas, and ideals of life. We can't give them every single lesson. We can't teach them everything. We know a lot of life is on the job learning, but we want to try to at least give them as much as possible. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like a loving, doting father, gives us important ideas and ideals step by step, all in an effort to set us up for national and individual success. All right, we'll stop over here for tonight. Thank you.